I'm making this video about war movies, and this is a cold open. I'm making this video about war movies, and in every single second of my spare time, you can certainly find me in my living room watching a war movie. Like, I've probably watched about, like, 11 at this point. I've already seen a lot to begin with. I will admit here and now that, like, I actually like war movies, not for their ethics, but just because I find them... I mean, it's probably just, like, a morbid enjoyment out of them, which is horrible, but, like, you know, many of us are not brave enough to admit that, and I am. So I do get a morbid enjoyment out of it, as well as it's, like, the stakes are so emotional that you feel, like, really in touch with your emotions in a way that's strange.
See, this is all really, really inconvenient for me because the new season of both versions of Love Island came out this month. And I'm watching the British one, and it's so good. And all I want is for Maya to be watching it so we can converse. Like, I just need her observations about it, like, desperately. And she's like, I actually can't. I'm so sorry. I have to watch this war movie tonight.
I'm like, babe, sorry. I can't watch season 12 of Love Island UK because I'm too busy watching Full Metal Jacket. Or, like, fucking Schindler's
List. Island girlfriend and war movie boyfriend. That's us.
Literally, could be girlfriend, actually. Don't be fucking homophobic.
It's June of all months that we're recording. I'm so sorry to the
community. Pride Month, no less. Fuck. Okay. So yeah, I'm watching many war movies, and last night I watched Apocalypse Now for the first time. I've, like, started it many times. I know the lore. I work in, like, the movie criticism industry. I'm aware of it. There's a lot of movies I'm, like, ambiently aware of, but not... like, haven't seen. It's also just so, like, ubiquitous in pop culture that it's, like, of course, like, everyone kind of knows about it.
Also, I feel like, and I don't know if it's not necessarily the case here, but I just feel like watching The Simpsons as a child made me aware of every kind of important movie.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, I couldn't watch The Shining. Well, I watched it, but I knew exactly what was going to happen because The Simpsons.
You're, like, boring. Yeah, Simpsons have a lot of debt to pay for their spoilers. And so do I, probably. So, but... Yeah, it's so ubiquitous. Like, I at one point I realized that I caught a Sex in the City reference where at the end of the movie, he goes, the horror. And then I remembered in Sex in the City, Anthony being like, the horror. And I was like, oh.
Not me truly never thinking that you were first saying that they referenced Sex in the City in Apocalypse Now. Yeah. And I was like trying to do the math in my head for how that could possibly
They're on
be
the
true.
Boat. Martin Sheen's like, so are you, like, a Carrie or Miranda? They're so bored. But then I was, like, reading up on the movie because, you know, I kind of know the lore, but not enough of it. There's so much lore. They made a whole documentary about it because the movie production was just, like, absolute
Heart
hell.
Heart of Darkness,
which was my least favorite book that we read in high school also.
Wait,
Joseph
is that
Conrad
what I
also has a lot of debt to pay. Yeah, it's Heart of Darkness, a filmmaker's apocalypse.
There's a really good episode of Community, from what I remember, that's based off of the documentary about the failed production. And that's why I know about this, because, again... I just watch pop culture about pop culture and not the original source.
Yeah, she's a secondary source queen, and honestly, yes. So am I. Yeah, and so Martin Sheen literally had a heart attack while they were filming. He was 36, so, like, you know, you can imagine how bad it was. They used a body double actually for Martin Sheen in the movie, and the body double was just, like, his brother because he had a fucking heart attack and was, like, out of commission because they thought he was gonna die. So they just have a body double for, like, a bunch of his scenes. Thank God, I guess they look similar, but. It was such a mess of production, but the movie is so fucking amazing. It's, like, insane. It's so incredible. Me being like, guys, you gotta watch Apocalypse Now. So good.
Or, guys, alternatively, you could watch Love Island and converse with me about that, which was way more enriching.
Did you know Marlon Brando fucked Richard Pryor and Marvin Gaye?
I did. Well, yeah, because Quincy Jones, I'm pretty sure, like... towards the end of his life, was, like, just spilling all these secrets about who, yeah. like, was sleeping with each other in Hollywood, which, thank you, King, for that service.
Yeah. I think Marlon...
do want to know.
Brando was pretty open about it, too. I don't know if he fucked Michael Jackson, but apparently he and Michael Jackson were, like, besties by the end of his life, too. Like, he would, like, hide out at Neverland.
Oh.
Isn't that so fat? You're like, oh, Marlon
Hollywood
Brando's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Anyways.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the internet phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about beauty on the internet. Social media may have snatched our faces, but has it also snatched our souls? If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly mini episodes, and early access to our regular programming. And if you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps a lot.
You ended on such a question mark.
Oh, because that helps a lot. Is that better for you?
Incredible, yeah.
Whatever mood we're in, we like to surround ourselves with things that match it. Whether that's watching a tearjerker when we're feeling blue, or listening to the right music to get inspired, it's important to curate the right vibe. That's why we're excited to partner with Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC products right to your door. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. And with our promo code REHASH, you can get 20% off your first order on mood.com. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, sleepy time to get you settled for a restful night, or chill out for some needed relaxation. Sure, you can get THC gummies just about anywhere these days, but why not personalize it? Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorsteps. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code REHASH. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code REHASH when you check out to save 20% off your first order.
I'm so excited to finally learn if I'm a pear or an apple bodied type.
Oh my, yeah, I have terrible news for you. That's
cucumber?
That's, no. You think we're talking about fruits today, baby? No. This is the kibby body system. This isn't apples and oranges. Okay, this is a little like more advanced than that.
Oh god.
Kind of.
Are we doing math? Fuck no. No.
No, but we're doing something in the middle. So great. If you've ever found yourself in like a TikTok or Instagram Reels doom scroll, then like maybe you've come across a video like this.
So I'm starting a new series today on what each kibby family can wear in the summertime, and we're starting with dramatics. Now, because they look best in very heavy fabrics that hold a lot of shape, it could be harder to dress in the summer, but I think I have some great options. This sheath dress is very narrow to the body, it keeps its form with that thicker fabric, it has a high neck, but it's still fabulously cool for the summertime. Keep in mind that a skirt like this is going to look very short and even more exaggerated on a natural because they're so long, but I think it's a really fun vibe. Bermuda shorts are really in this summer, and I think that most types are really going to struggle with them, except for maybe the classic family and the dramatics. And then Taylor Swift has been coming out with so much street style. This is not from this era. I believe this is from the 1989 era, which she has a lot of summer looks for. I just love the romper-esqueness of this. It has that length that makes her legs look Barbie doll long, but the whole outfit has a lot of structure, keeps that vertical line by having the monochromatic look. Overall, the look still looks very classic, but it has a form that works with the dramatics.
Maya, you grew up consuming 2000s media like myself. Do you remember the first time you were ever introduced to the idea of like body types or shapes?
Yeah, in some sort of like magazine. Oh, you know what? It was probably TLC. It was probably What Not to Wear. Like, I used to feign illness and my mom would stay home with me from her job, which, you know, brutal. I think she also would want to stay home, to be honest.
She's like, and then, well, I can't wait for my daughter to come down with the flu so we can watch women's television.
Well, she knew I was faking. She knew it. But we would watch, we would sit down and then we'd like eat our little like snacks. Like she'd make a little board of snacks and then we'd watch What Not to Wear and we just simply binge it. And it was my favorite kind of day. But yeah, I definitely learned about it from like Stacey London and Clinton Kelly being like, girl, your body looks like a rock and you cannot be wearing those like frog shirts that you wear every day. There's like one lady who loved frogs and I just think they should have let her keep her frog aesthetic. But anyways, and then they like turn everyone into this like dumpy looking office worker and they'd give them some like terrible Karen haircut. But yeah, there's a lot of like, no, you can't and, like, wear that because your body doesn't work.
I feel like
that.
They love to give them like Auburn highlights.
Lots of Auburn highlights, lots of like heavily layered haircuts, which, you know, were in fashion at the time. But it was just like dumpy office wear. And I'm like, the frog lady, especially, I'm like, let her cook. She wants to wear her fucking frog shirts. Her family seems to hate her. Just let her have this. Or like, why don't you get her a gorgeous, aesthetically pleasing top and give her a frog pin? You know, why does she have to get rid of the frogs?
Yeah, like some like frog embroidery. I mean, our life on this planet is so short and finite. We need to have our joy. And also, did you know that they're back with a new show that I watched an episode of?
Stacey London and Clinton Kelly?
Yeah, it's called Wear Whatever the Fuck You Want. And it's their way of trying to rectify it. But it's kind of, they're not like as, like they're not telling people, oh, don't wear this. This is a, it's more people who are like, I want to improve the way I dress or like whatever. And they like give them clothes to try on. But like the clothes
it's not people getting
nice.
Like put up by their friends and family.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're not being like covertly filmed in their ugly outfits or anything.
I've started to develop a bit of an aversion to Stacey London, who like absolutely nothing against her, but because I'm like specifically graying right in the front of my part area, a lot of people are like, you should just grow your hair out and like, you know, you look like that woman, you know, that woman. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Stacey London. And they're like, yes. And, like, that woman was, like, 45 when she filmed What Not to Wear. Like,
and
I don't...
Just
I am 28.
Only graying, like, from the front of her hair, which is kind of cool. It's not the same as, you know, when, yeah, you're me and you're going fully gray in your mid-20s.
Well, I'm also like, yeah, I don't need to own my grays. Everyone always tells me in Hannah to own our grays. And it's like, bitch, yeah. we're young. Absolutely not. Yeah. I'll own my grays when I'm, like, in perimenopause.
So the first time I ever encountered body types, I think, was on The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody when I was thinking about it. Because I think there's an episode where London tells someone that she should be, like, the dress she's wearing is meant for someone with, like, an hourglass figure. But they have, like, a squash-shaped body or, like, some kind of, like, ugly fruit-shaped body.
Oh, I'm recalling this.
Yeah. And I remember being like, I don't know what any of these words mean. But then eventually, you know, you consume more media like What Not to Wear and you pick up on it. And then I read a lot of 17 and there'd always be, like, how to dress for your body type. And there was always four body types, which was tall, short, athletic, and curvy.
There's no, like, skinny?
I think
there's
that
no,
was
like,
supposed to
bigger?
Be, like, tall. I think it was, like, if you... like, I think the implication was that you were tall and skinny or short and skinny or curvy meant everything else or, like, athletic.
Yeah, where's skinny representation? Okay. interesting. Yeah, I do remember that as well. I was reading, like, you know, J14. Or, like, I'd read Cosmo because I was, like, horny and... I was a child that I didn't really understand. Like, I would just read a read Cosmo.
Who let you mirror Cosmo?
It was in the airport. The airport.
Oh, okay.
You know, in the airport.
Like the magazine store? Oh,
yeah. I read it standing up like I was a little boy reading Playboys in the convenience store. He'd be like, how to achieve female orgasm? I'd be like,
that's like if John Mulaney has like a bit in one of his specials where he talks about how one day his dad found under his bed an issue of Cosmo magazine and like two cigarettes in his suitcase.
You know, you got chin implant. Speaking of beauty on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways.
So yeah, these were my main reference points. And so one day when I came across a video, like the one we put above, I was confused because my understanding of body types was that you were either a tall, short, curvy, athletic, or like a squash. And so I was like, oh, this one is way more descriptive and in-depth and, like, using, like, more, like, kind of neutral terminology, what is going on. And what I later learned was that the person in the video was using the Kibbe Image Identity System, which is a classification system from the heyday of the 1980s when self-help books were, like, the big thing. And that has, like, somehow become one of, like, the internet's favorite ways now to categorize women. So I'm going to start off by telling you about the man behind the Kibbe system himself. It's a man named David Kibbe.
I was going to say Joseph Kibbe, so I feel so good about close. That.
So, I mean, they're both biblical names. So before we dive into the system, I want to tell you about him because I just find him, like, really fascinating and, like, kind of a narcissist in, like, such a campy way that I kind of get behind. So this is how David is described in the about section of his website that he definitely wrote himself. A consummate artist, celebrated author, media star, critically acclaimed performer, style avatar, and trendsetter, master of color, as well as a savvy businessman, his greatest accomplishment and contribution may well be raising consciousness, bringing down ideas that have never been seen before, and gently pushing people forward. He introduced self-love and love itself into the beauty/fashion industry, which...
Love itself.
Which before David had been primarily focused around people's fears and fixing their perceived flaws.
I think he would do really well in Apocalypse Now. Like, at the end of the, you know, I think he would be a good Marlon Brando.
I think that maybe that would be good for his, like, moral character development.
His ego.
Actually. Yeah.
I don't know about moral character development.
No, maybe not. So David describes himself as a child piano prodigy.
I too say that about myself.
Not me. I was so bad.
No, I went to cello camp. It's different.
Right. Yeah. That's you got to stop.
Stolen valor.
Yeah. So his background as a child piano prodigy led him to later pursue show business in New York City. And while he was there, he was working for a casting director. And he says he saw a lot of people lose out on roles to others who were less talented than the people who got the parts. And he attributed that to the fact that they hadn't cultivated the right look for themselves. And so David was nostalgic for this era of Hollywood stars who all had carefully constructed images which complemented their types and identified those images as the key to their success. So,
like how, like, Marilyn McRib. Like how Marilyn Monroe got some ribs removed, like that kind of type, like you're specific.
Well, just that, like, for example, he brings up how Jean Harlow was the ultimate femme fatale, and so she constructed her look around that. Or Betty Davis was the, quote, saucy spitfire. And, like, those were the types of roles she got. And so, like, her whole image and, like, star persona revolved around that. Audrey Hepburn as well, like, her kind of, like, classy but, like, slightly tomboyish look. He brings them up as, like, reference points because... he's basically like, that's how they, like, got ahead, was that they, like, figured out what was their look and they, like, leaned into it. He begins to work in style consultancy, including for a company called Color Me Beautiful, which we will talk about later. But through his work, he's eventually asked to write a book. It's the 1980s, and yeah, like I said, the self-improvement industry is booming, and I feel like everybody was getting a book deal for anything. And so in 1987, he puts out his book, which is called David Kibbe's Metamorphosis, Discover Your Image Identity and Dazzle as Only You, all caps, Can.
That's He's nice. Straight.
He's married to a woman.
Isn't Clinton Kelly also straight?
No. There's no way. There's no way. And neither is Stacey London, actually.
Oh, a gay icon.
Yeah.
That makes sense, actually.
So I'm going to tell you about Metamorphosis because basically, like, the entire Kibbe system links back to this book that he put out, and, like, everything we've seen online about it is kind of about this book. So he introduces the book as an alternative to all the other beauty advice out there that was teaching women that their unique features were flaws. And he says that his objective is to encourage women to work with the features they were given rather than fight against them or cover them up. Okay. And he writes in the foreword of his book that he began his styling work when he realized that a new approach to beauty was desperately needed, and that he'd seen masses of women being conned into spending fortunes on clothes that were unflattering and unfulfilling, without any evidence that the energy, effort, time, and money being spent was actually making the involved woman feel better about herself. Do you think there is like a touch of irony in that being like the foreword of a book selling beauty advice?
I mean, yeah, there's a bit of irony in like, okay, well, what you could spend all your money on is just looking better. And it's like, we're keeping the element of spend all your money. It's just, do you want to spend all your money and look like shit? Or do you want to spend all your money and look beautiful? And in both cases, you're dropping a bag. And
yeah, you know, I think there's just this funny, like almost like pseudo, like altruistic framing with which people like to like introduce these ideas where they're like, well, you've been misled all along and those people were just doing it to get your money, but I'm actually doing you a service, which unfortunately you need to pay me for, but that's because it's the actual thing that's going to help you.
It's like marketing 101.
Yeah, he talks a lot about like how he has all these like gifts given to him by God, and like I wish I could just like read you his entire website. It is fascinating. But he basically is like, this is me. Like, I actually can help you. And there's like almost a culty vibe going on.
I was going to say, I mean, this is why I said he would have been good in Apocalypse Now. He's got a bit of a cult energy.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So David's proposed plan of action is to then invoke those old Hollywood starlets and help women identify an image theme for themselves within his system of 13 types. And those themes then act as guides, which David will then instruct readers on like how to follow with every detail of their look so that they can lean into and like show off the best version of themselves based off of that type. Does this idea of like your kind of image identity not remind you of like personal branding as we talk about it today?
Yeah, I think people love to be classified into something. I mean, I do too. You know, it's like it goes in the same realm of like, oh, how I love lists. You know, I love lists, but make me a list and I'll eat it right up.
That's because you're a Virgo.
It's because I'm a Virgo. But also like I love to be placed in a category that like I don't usually necessarily agree with, but I'll be like, that feels good. You know, there's like a little bit of like a serotonin boost to that. And I think that people, of course, I think that's like amplified today on social media and all the girlies making stuff up. It's really just like, that's kind of the whole energy of this, that the whole science behind it is like, do you like to make stuff up? Same. But yeah, no, I think that the personal branding aspect makes a lot of sense. I think that he is right that it is easier to brand yourself if you just kind of pick a thing and go with it. And I think that that's happening on social media. You know, everyone kind of has their little shtick. I don't think social media is made for like nuance or like coloring outside the lines. I think it's made for putting yourself within these boundaries and then kind of like delivering that to people. It's like a reliability almost that I think people appreciate. But is it good for us? We will find out.
It makes me think a little bit about like putting together a dating app profile where you kind of like have an understanding of like the different types of people on dating apps and like what they're leading into to like sell themselves and like, stick out, but also be like, I know the type of people looking for this type of person will like this. You know what I mean? You know, like guys on dating apps where I'm like, oh, you're all kind of doing the same shtick because you kind of have identified the different types of guy that
the small bean guys, the ones I stay away from, but the ones who pose like this, you guys can't see me, but I'll show Hannah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Not yeah, but yeah. That is like a guy absolutely leaning in. He's got his little crop top and he's going in his little picture and he's like, I'd love to take you on a movie date.
Oh yeah, oh my god, every other guy on Hinge mentions Letterboxd in one of their prompts and I'm like, ooh, we get it, king.
What are your Letterboxd top four? Honestly, it's kind of cute. Now that I say it out loud, I'm like, aw.
No, because it's all, if one person did it, if everyone does it, it's like, because also
it's a grift. It's a grift.
It's also like, okay, again, like this is just us categorizing our personalities. Anyways, this is a detour.
She cannot be placed in a box.
Yeah.
She cannot.
Me. So in order to understand the Kibbe system, we actually have to talk about ancient Chinese philosophy. Because the foundations of the Kibbe system are based on the principle of yin and yang. So Kibbe isn't actually responsible for like this initial application of yin and yang to styling. That actually goes back to the work of a professor at the Columbia Teachers College named Bell Northrup in the 1930s. Belle wrote an article basically asking if you are a yin or a yang woman in the late 30s. And then this principle was expanded upon later in the 60s by someone named Harriet Tilden McJimsey in her home ec textbook, Art and Clothing Selection, which actually ended up containing a lot of the seedlings for the ideas that it would end up in Kibbe's book. Kind of feels to me like he ripped her off a lot.
Derivative.
So yin and yang obviously like often represent opposing forces working in tandem to create a sense of balance. And Kibbe uses that to categorize different kinds of physical attributes and then their corresponding essence to basically like set you off on trying to find your image identity. So I'm going to tell you some of the attributes in yin and yang. For yin, the physical attributes include petite, rounded, voluptuous curves, delicate bone structure, large luminous eyes, delicately pointed chin, sloped or tapered shoulders, hourglass figure, small hands and feet, delicate skin, fair complexion, and softly textured lustrous hair. And then the essence that's assigned to it, their basic essence is receptive, accommodating, charming, enormously appealing, magnetic, a person capable a person capable of attracting, diplomatic, artistic. And then for yang, the physical attributes are tall, angular, or sharp bone structure, high or exotic cheekbones, blunt jawline, prominent nose or facial features, square shoulders, straight body lines, large hands and feet, distinct coloring, extreme texture to hair, either silk smooth, extra fine, or wildly coarse. And then the basic essence is dominant, creative, forceful, regally imposing, a person capable of persuading, charismatic, bold.
He'd be really confused by the existence of like Jenna Ortega or like some other short, skinny girl, because apparently they don't exist in his you know.
Well, and so when we actually get to like the classification of the Kibbe body system, you'll see how kind of hard it is to pinpoint people and how he tries to like kind of accommodate for that.
Also, just but, I too love it, the measurement of essence. I love putting essence on a scale and deciding
goes with your essence, because that's sort of the linkage being made. And this part of the book is almost like directly ripped off from McJimsey's book. But a notable difference is that in her book, she also like identifies the fact that traditionally yin represents the feminine while yang represents the masculine. And basically what he's identifying here or doing is putting traits that he thinks are like stereotypically feminine and stereotypically masculine into these two camps. He's not saying it, but like it's based off of a book that does explicitly say it, and those are what those principles represent. And so it kind of, this is the beginning of like a lot of the stereotyping that we're going to see take place in Kibbe's advice that is already kind of counterintuitive to his sort of like, I'm helping you like unlock your true essence, whatever, because a lot of this is going to boil down to like, if you're tall, you're masculine. If you're short, you're feminine. Round girl, tall, masculine. So even though the yin yang symbol is famously a circle representing a cycle of sorts, Kibbe uses what he calls a yin yang scale to then sort out his 13 body types. There's actually 10 now, because in recent years he's gotten rid of 3 of them for some reason. But I'm going to send you a photo, like a pretty popular version of the scale that gets passed around. So do you want to describe what you're seeing here?
It's so hard to describe. Okay, so on one end of the scale, we have yang. On the left end of the scale, we have yang. Underneath says angular and sharp. On the furthest left-hand corner under that, it says 5'5". So women who are yang are 5'5". And
or taller.
Or taller. So they're real tall. And there's a girl. Me neither. I can't figure it out. She just, like, has abs. She has, like, maybe more of, like, a 2000s body type, and that she's just, like, She doesn't have a lot of, like, curvature. She's just very, like, she's, like, muscular and thin, basically. Cool. And then it kind of goes from there. So this girl is labeled as dramatic. And then slowly we see, like, other types of women who it's just so unclear what the change in body type is between these women, other than that they seem kind of muscular. But, like, there's a picture of Sophia Loren, and she that looks quite different from the girl on the left, but she's right next to the girl on the left. And then there's, like, a more muscular girl on the other side of her. So then it says, like, dramatic flows into flamboyant natural. Then there's true natural, or just natural. There's just, like, so little clarity in, like, the progression of these women and what exactly we're looking at here. But there's, like, then we go soft natural, dramatic classic, true classic. And he says, that's balanced. And there's, like, a blonde lady there who the actress...
Like, yeah, true classic is, like, everything's, like, normal. Like, there's no normal distinctness.
Yeah, yeah. There's no distinctness. But then he has a woman who is not too much of a bum and, like, big tits, I guess. And that's kind of... That's her. Very unclear what the image choice is and why. Then we go soft classic. We're moving right at the moment. We go flamboyant gamine, true gamine. And I think that's, like, what, Rita Moreno, I think? You don't have a very good view of her body because she's, like, facing the side, so you don't know what you're looking at. Then we flow into Halle Berry and Halle Berry soft gamine. We know what Halle Berry looks like. Then we go into, like, another woman from the 40s, and apparently she is theatrical romantic. And then on the furthest right hand corner we have romantic, and we're very unclear about, like, the height scale just disappears. It starts on the left and it never comes back. So, and then underneath this, there's a note that says, please note, pure natural, pure classic, and pure gamine are no longer in the system.
Yeah, so
I wonder what happened there. And on the furthest right-hand corner, it says yin, soft and round. Cool.
Yes. So you're right in that the scale doesn't fully make a lot of sense at all. I think it's supposed to, like, set it up so, like, on the yang side of the scale before you get to classic, which is dramatic, naturals, and then, like, some classics, you're not supposed to be taller than 5'5". And then from there down, it's people who are under 5'5". That's, like, gamine and romantic. And then based off of that, then you have, like, for each kind of type, you have a softer version and then a more angular version of the type. If all of this sounds like absolute mumbo jumbo, it's because it
also
is.
Also, wait, sorry. Sophia Loren's 5'9", so she doesn't exist on the scale at all, I suppose.
Oh, no. 5'5 is, like, that's, like, if you're a classic, you're about 5'5". Oh. The other ones are supposedly supposed to be a bit taller.
But then for some reason it's on the furthest left-hand corner, so that's visually
no,
confusing.
But do you see how the line goes through her head? It means she's taller than
Oh, I see. It goes through her head.
It goes all through right. her head.
Okay.
But yeah, it's basically like the scale, and she's not on here, but one of the more classic versions, I'm pretty sure, of a flamboyant dramatic would be Keira Knightley. She's just so, like, lean and angular, all the way to, like, Marilyn Monroe, who's got, like, a classic curvy figure. But within the middle of that, it's really, really hard to uncover what each of these are, or, like, really what makes them different from one another. I'm not going to actually break down the characteristics of each body type because it would take forever. And, like I said, like, some of the distinctions are so nuanced that talking about it would make me sound like a crazy person if I, like, tried to rationalize it. But in Metamorphosis, Kibbe offers a quiz, which is meant to help you understand or break down what your type is. And so the quiz itself is multiple choice, and it's broken down into categories of question. So you answer questions about your bone structure, your flesh, which is the word he uses, and which I don't fully understand what they're referring to as flesh, but the Kibbe system loves to say flesh instead of, like, fat or muscle, your facial bones, your facial features, and your hair. And then for each question, you write down the corresponding letter for the most accurate answer, and then you, like, tally them up at the end, and whatever letter you wrote down the most will point you to your type, and then the next one you wrote down the most might determine if you're, like, a flamboyant or, like, a soft or whatever those distinctions are.
And that's the essence.
No. So based off of your body type
oh.
and, like, your features and your body and your bone structure, that's supposed to tell you what your essence is.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Because, like I said, like, if you are short, you're, like, girlish. And if you are tall, you are masculine.
So the tea is like what's on the inside is determined by what's on the outside.
Yes. Which is really funny because this whole book is basically about unlocking who you really are and embracing that and showing that off. But in order to unlock who you are, you have to like do a really, really descriptive breakdown of your physical body and bone structure.
Cool.
So KB encourages that readers take the quiz in a leotard and with a friend who will help them answer the questions. And he stresses the importance of taking an objective look at yourself. I attempted to take the quiz so I could like understand how it worked. I didn't do it with a friend, but all the online quizzes are like, just take a photo of yourself in your underwear straight on and do it. Cool. And I was like, sure. I could not for the life of me, like after taking a couple of these quizzes and trying to answer those questions, I could not for the life of me even get anywhere close to understanding what my kibby type is. And I don't think that's a reflection of me. I think it's because this whole thing makes almost no sense.
It's not you, it's them.
It's not me, it's them. And it almost feels a little bit like it was designed to not fully make sense. So Metamorphosis has been out of print for decades. And yet, like, somehow it and Kibby have, like, really blown up online. It's been out of print, I think, since the 90s or early 2000s. And I wish I could tell you how exactly, like, the image identity system found its way online and, like, how it got such a big following. But I couldn't really pinpoint to a specific instance or moment. But there started to be a bunch of Facebook groups popping up that were, like, dedicated to the Kibby system. And there's actually kind of quote-unquote official one that he's a member of called Strictly Kibby that sounds like a fucking cult. And there's also, like, then in, like, the mid-2010s, like, a bunch of blog posts and YouTube videos started popping up that were people teaching people how to, like, identify and dress for their kibby type. There's also, like, a lot of dissections of how different characters on different shows dress in accordance to, like, their kibby type and, like, all of, like, those kinds of style analysis.
Okay, what would Mrs. Incredible be?
Oh, that's a really good one.
Tell me.
Let me look at the scale.
What's the Pixar mom on the kitty body?
Do we
the
think she's tall or short?
She's so remember. Short.
She's
well
so
next
short,
to Mr. Incredible, who's superhuman tall. So who's to say? But if she's anything like Holly Hunter, tiny.
I think she would be the Marilyn Monroe of it all, would she not? Or would she be Halle Berry?
But
she
does have that like unnaturally long, like gangly torso, as she is a Pixar character. She's
much
slim thick.
To be thought about. You guys, please write in. Let us know what kibby body type is Mrs. Incredible.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. Please let us know. I actually really do want to know. We'll keep the comments open this time.
But only for that. Don't you dare abuse that. So then around 2023, the kibby method made its way to TikTok, which is when people started writing about it more and it started getting more attention. I don't know if a longer form version of the kibby system is any better, but once you've synthesized it down to like TikTok, it's really just like telling people that there's a body type and here's how to dress for it, and it just gets really like women's magazine quiz coded. Mm-hmm. Kibby himself has kind of a love-hate relationship with his online presence, because on the one hand it's like made him and his work relevant again and probably more than it even was in the 80s, but on the other hand he seems to like really, really resent other people trying to interpret his system for themselves, even though he published it into a book for the public to buy. And this is
death of the author king. Death of the author,
literally. But my yeah, he's the first person to ever bring love into fashion.
Self-love and love itself.
Yeah, right.
And no one appreciates that.
Yeah, we never bring that up enough.
Does he have a toupee? He sounds like he would have a toupee.
Oh, I think you should Google a picture of him.
Kind of what I expected. There's like this terrifying generation of like gay men from the 80s who just like have scary veneers and like a toupee and the same hairstyle that they've worn for like... Oh, he kind of looks cool here.
Famously also married to a woman, Maya.
Oh,
racist
fuck!
Heterosexual identity.
Fuck! Okay. Oh, his... Okay, actually, his wife is kind of... Actually, I'm kind of down for it. I like it. I like how he looks.
It's fascinating.
I like how he looks. I'm down. And there's a photo of him taken in like the New York Times, and he actually looks pretty. They put him in like streetwear. I'm like, David, you look pretty good.
There's what's one your, article.
What's
where
David's
it's like
Kibbe
Dave,
body type?
He styled himself. Well, no, I don't know if there's a Kibbe system for men.
I just pulled one up. It says male Kibbe types, and there's a photo of Benedict Cumberbatch on it.
Well, actually, I've seen videos about the Gamine type, and they keep bringing up ASAP Rocky because short king that he is a male Gamine.
Did I tell you guys I stood like 3 inches away from him one day? He like got out of a car. I was standing right next to the car. It was late at night and no one was around except for me and my friends. And I was like, oh, I should move over for this car door opening. It was kind of parked on the sidewalk. And lo and behold, who gets out? It's ASAP.
ASAP.
It's ASAP. And I was like, who is that stunning, gorgeous man? And it was ASAP. And he was tiny. I'm a 5'8 queen. So, you know, the average man is basically my height. So big ups to him for being a short king and being so gorgeous. Yeah.
And pulling Rihanna.
And also pulling Rihanna, who is how tall? Sorry.
I don't know.
5'8". Okay.
Recently snuck backstage at a concert. And, you know, whenever you see famous people in person, they're all way tinier than you'd even, like, believe.
So short.
Pink Panthers and Charlie XCX, both little tinies.
Charlie XCX? How tall is Charlie? I thought she'd be, like, 5'6".
No, she looks small, but again, she's like smaller.
She's 5'3".
Like me.
See, I feel like I've related to her so much being a half Indian girl myself, but
but now that she's short, it's done.
Can't relate to her at all. Yeah, and we're probably really different on the Kibbe body scale. Like, we have different essences. We shouldn't even be in the same room as each other.
No, absolutely not. I think it would like throw off the yin yang vibe entirely.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, back on track. Basically, like, Kibbe's sort of almost like authoritarian approach to his own system now is really made evident in the Strictly Kibbe Facebook group, where people are literally like, Kibbe's word is law, guys, and he has like the final say on determining anybody's type. Because for people who are into the Kibbe body system, like, a big pastime is just trying to identify different celebrities. And there's a few celebrities who have become, like, really controversial, where people will be like, I know Kibbe said that she's definitively this body type, but, like, I can't believe it. And, like, people being like, you're not allowed to go against, like, Kibbe's word. I feel like Sarah Jessica Parker is, like, a pretty controversial one because she's short and thin and athletic, but also she's got, like, a complicated ball.
God,
by the
she looks
of the
so
system.
Goddamn good.
Incredible body, yeah.
That the worst episode of Sex and the City is where they go to Atlantic City. That's not arguable, and even then, it's still good. So that's I'm saying that. But there's a scene where she's kind of pregnant, and she's wearing these like really low rise, very skinny jeans, and then like this kind of top that has tassels on it to hide her tummy. But she's like supposed to look sexy. She has her like crop top on, and I was like, "You look so fucking good. It's disgusting.
Yeah,
disgusting.
No, she has like a beautiful body, but as far as the Kibbe system goes." Very hard to classify. A
she
controversial
doesn't exist.
One. Yeah.
She like, and Jenna
she's
Ortega.
She's ticking too many boxes. There's too much yin and yang going on.
I do love his like ultimate marketing move is that you buy my book, but then like you can never talk about my method again. The only way to talk about my method is if you meet me in person and I determine it.
Okay,
for you.
So literally
not very sustainable.
I was about to get to that. Yeah. Well, the thing is that this book was put out in the 80s, right? It's been out of print for most of the existence of like the internet as we know it, so it's I think kind of benefits him to like not have it in print, because it means that if you've somehow fallen into the Kibbe world and like really want like a true analysis, which he's made it very clear you don't have the objective eyes to like do for yourself, and like no one, no matter how much they study his work, can like accurately do it, then you have to go to Kibbe and pay thousands of dollars to have like a makeover done on you, basically. And that is his system. Although he did put out another book this year, and apparently the styling tips are like so 80s and like so dated in a way that I mean
he's like, this needs more shoulder pads.
Well, literally, his advice for some types is, like, based off of shoulder pad and, like, tailored suits and, like, very 80s garments, which...
Hey, no shame in shoulder pads. Those women could keep their bags on their shoulders.
Yeah, you know? Look, as someone with famously sloped and hunched back,
dainty
allegedly,
feminine shoulders. Oh.
I could, well... from my slouching. I could really use some shoulder pads for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, there's some like really strict rules against tailoring for almost every body type, which I think just feels really 80s coded because like no one wears tailored clothing anymore.
Oh, but we should though. It's actually really good for you to go tailor your clothes because this era of like a, where did I read this? The stretchy shirt era where it's like everything's made to stretch. Maybe it was articles of interest or something.
Well,
where
it's that like, would make sense because it's mass produced. So it
needs that's to what to I mean. Yeah. Yeah. The mass produced kind of stretchy shirt and we've lost the art of tailoring, which actually like does wonders for a fit and also for investment in your clothing.
Well, yes. You've heard it here, folks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you were right that basically he's made it kind of like weirdly exclusive or like made it this thing where ultimately it's up to him because he wants people's money, which reminds me of another online trend, color analysis, which we did a mini-sode kind of talking a bit about the like history of the side of like color theory and how that goes into color analysis
on the Patreon, which you should subscribe to,
which you can find on our Patreon. But basically, like the Kibbe system, seasonal color analysis is sort of a relic of the 1980s and this like whole self-improvement craze. And the heyday of color analysis was brought on through a book called Color Me Beautiful by Carol Jackson, which was first published in 1973, but then stayed on the bestseller list for like years and years into the 80s, which is when it kind of became this whole enterprise that sold like makeup depending on your seasonal color. It sold special books for like men. They did like in-person consultations. And David actually worked for the men's part of Color Me Beautiful earlier on in his career.
Right.
So the basis of seasonal color analysis for the uninformed is that we can all be divided into four subcategories of seasons based on our personal coloring. So this includes your hair, eye, and skin color, but it also involves like the hues and undertones of these colors as well. So if you have cool undertones, dark hair, bright eyes, then you're winter. Or if you like warm undertones, light hair, and light eyes, you're spring. And consumers are then encouraged to shop within a palette that is considered complementary to their season. And women used to carry around swatch books of like their seasonal colors going shopping in case they were like, oh, I want to buy a shirt, but I'm just doing this on like on a whim and like I need to make sure it's going to be the right color for me. So like when they do their consultations, they'd buy these swatch books that would help them with shopping.
I wonder how brown and black women figure into the color theory analysis of it all. Were they accounted for?
They certainly weren't the basis of it because mm-hmm. a lot of color analysis also has to do with the contrast of your hair, eye, and skin color, which
right.
if you're talking about white women, yes, there's like low contrast if you have light hair and light eyes and fair skin. But yeah, I mean, that doesn't necessarily translate to a woman of like other skin colors.
Just as I suspected. And you know what? To this day, my mom has not been able to get laser hair removal because once again, technology has failed brown women. And she would have really liked to have that.
Yeah, but Maya, as a white woman with really fair body hair, I too can't have it
laser. So true, mama. And that's so yeah. true. Call me out.
And so remember... Don't ever forget about blonde white women.
Blonde white women. Yes.
Yes.
And the gingers.
And the gingers.
Actually,
and...
no. Gingers, I feel like, are pretty hairy. Are they like, I keep thinking you're ginger, Hannah. I think you're ginger.
I've convinced people, everyone in London, they keep thinking I'm blonde. And I'm like, I'm not even a true blonde, you guys. I'm a mousy brown.
And see,
which
no one would have ever I've known that had you not told us.
I digress. I don't really think that like the concept of color analysis ever really went away because I feel like I vaguely heard about it like, growing up. But having your colors analyzed by a professional, which costs hundreds of dollars, even thousands, has definitely had like a notable resurgence in recent years. It first picked back up in South Korea, actually, in the 2010s. And like people would fly over there to have their colors done. But like now the industry is also popping off again in North America. So similar to the Kibbe system, you're discouraged from attempting to do your own color analysis because the only way to really know your colors is by paying like thousands or hundreds of dollars to have it done by a professional, which I think is really interesting. This idea of like telling women, like, I know you've been dressing yourself and like putting makeup on yourself your entire life and like think that maybe you've figured out some kind of like taste or like some kind of idea of what you like or works for you. But ultimately, like, you're absolutely clueless and like should not trust your like internal judgment.
There's a lot of lack of intuition going on here. There's a lot of, you don't have intuition about yourself. Like, I think fashion's intuitive and like some people struggle with it more than others. Can't relate. Just kidding. But like,
not in this podcast.
I honestly can't really relate. Like, I do have trouble understanding why someone would need advice, but I simply, we're all different. And so,
humble brag.
Oh, and you would say the same thing. Come on. Come on. Don't fake it.
No, it's true that I feel like here I was this whole time while researching this, dressing as if I were a winter when it turns out I may be a summer.
Oh, I thought you were spring. I'm confused.
No, a spring has warm undertones. I have cool undertones and blue eyes and light hair. I believe that I'm a summer, but I will never know for sure unless I pay a woman hundreds of dollars to put fabric next to my face.
Also, in the way that like the beauty industry preys upon our insecurities, I feel like this kind of preys upon our lack of trust in ourselves, you know?
And what's funny is that like this is what Kibbe also writes about in the preface of his book, which is just this idea that like these beauty industries are always going to tell you that like there's this new thing that you need to be conscious of, like there's this new thing that you don't understand, there's all of this like stuff you need to contend with because they're always going to want to sell you something. And it's like, king, you're literally teaching women this insane system on how to like try and understand their body by like making them categorize it in ways that they've never even thought to do before, which is awesome. And I love when a straight man does that. So
just don't get them started on the straight man creative director conversation, because don't open up that bag of worms, that can of worms.
The bag of worms. Kibbe would be creative directing were he getting his start today.
Demna.
Step aside every man in East London who's somehow a creative director.
Step aside, Demna. Kibbe's in town. He's gonna make us all wear shoulder pads.
Actually, that would be cool. So both of these, like I said, are from the 1980s that have like somehow become popular again online today. We recently worked together on a video you made for your Patreon, subscribe, about American Psycho, which is partially a satire of 1980s consumer culture. Do you have any, like, observations about that era, that obsession with, like, self-improvement and optimization, and why it is maybe making a comeback right now online?
I mean, a lot of my research has been overlapping in general, like, you know, with the Looks Maxing episode and the American Psycho, like, incels video, which, yes, the Patreon's not to be confused with the Rehash Patreon. It's my very own Patreon for my YouTube channel. And yeah, and I think, and then with Mar-a-Lago face, like it feels like the trend we're seeing, it's probably going to come up again in this season, but just like in these conservative eras, like materialism kind of skyrockets, like we said in Mar-a-Lago, because Bohemia's down and materialism's up, the yuppie's up. I know, I was thinking about this when you first started talking about how self-help books got so popular in the 80s, and I was like, why? I guess going into what you were saying about like self-branding, I feel like in times of financial... I mean, we're not in a financial boom right now, but we are in like a conservative era, looking bad for us financially in general. But it does feel like in these times where money feels like it's at the forefront of the zeitgeist, or like at the forefront of like cultural currency, self-branding is like the most important way to get ahead. So it would feel like needing to optimize yourself in order to further yourself. You know, as we talked about with Kimberly Guilfoyle or like Kristi Noem, trying to botch their faces apparently to get further up in the Republican Party. It feels like that's kind of the only pathway that people can see. So I could see why there'd be a bit of a mirror between those two eras. Boom, boom, back.
I feel like a little bit in these times where it feels like capitalism is like held up to like such high esteem and like, you know, we're really all about the money, money, money.
I was about to don't talk about Meghan Trainor again.
Put some respect on Jessie J's name. Thank you very much. But I think we perhaps lose a bit of our soul. And I think that there's this kind of obsession with like finding yourself or like optimizing yourself or just like understanding yourself when you've become so devoid from humanity because you're so centered around money that basically like this thing that you've brought up again, this idea of like capitalism will like steal your soul and then sell it back to you. Like, I think it's just this idea of people almost like feeling like they need, like they've lost sight with themselves and they like need to try and understand themselves, but like have completely lost the plot on how to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the American Psycho video, we quote this, I think it's a Vox article, where she talks about how Patrick Bateman and Donald Trump are kind of this, like, sadistic void howling within. And I thought it was such a great line, but it does feel like, oh, how do I upgrade my skin suit, you know? How do I upgrade my skin suit? And inside you, there is simply nothing going on. There's just the skin suit. And it feels a little bit like that's what's going on.
Researching the yuppies for your video and, like, they're embracing psychoanalysis and all of these other ways of like trying to understand who they are. And I feel like something about specifically the Kibbe system that like really stood out to me is that it feels like you're trying to use your physical attributes as a way of unlocking who you are as a person so that you can be the most of that type of person, which there's just like something so bleak to me about that, I suppose.
Well, what would be the most you version of you? Like, what would be the most extreme self-branding that you could do of yourself? What do you think? What would you lean into? Yeah, like, what would be the most extreme version of your brand that you could sell if you really locked in?
Well, okay, if we're going to talk about, like, use the Kibbe system for reference, I think the type that I'm probably going to end up being closest to is some kind of gamine, which is the, like, small, girlish one. Like, physically, I just, like, am small person. Well, like, I'm small, but I'm not like Marilyn Monroe curvy either, so I'm somewhere in like the gamine category. And so in all of these books, they're like, if you're a gamine, you should just like lean into that. Like, when a gamine tries and like looks too grown up, it looks like a little girl in like her mom's clothing, and they're like, you have to find ways to like suit that, you know.
Okay, so this is basically what Sabrina Carpenter's been doing, and everyone's so mad about it.
Yeah, that's like she's doing a gamine thing, I suppose.
She's doing a gamine thing. But what, Hannah, what would I be?
I don't know. You would probably be some kind of, I mean, you're like tall and angular. You're probably a dramatic.
No. No.
Yes, but no. Unfortunately, you'll have to take the like the Kibbe test, and then you can't even trust that. You'll have to ask Kibbe himself. Which is why you guys need to subscribe to our Patreon so we can get the Kibbe tests done.
Yeah, guys, we'll interview David Kibbe on this podcast if you subscribe to our Patreon right now.
Yeah, we could watch a live video of us being typed by this man. Obviously, like, just bringing it back and, like, closing us off, we've been poking a lot of fun at the system, and, like, for good reason. It's very silly. But I also think there's kind of like a darker aspect to it that is maybe worth like talking about a bit or unpacking, which is that like both this and seasonal color analysis are quite antiquated, and they're also like based on like older, really out of date writings about beauty and fashion and body types. So like color analysis is based off of writings from the 1800s, when like color theory was still being established. And then the Kibbe system has its roots in like women's media from the 1930s. So obviously there's going to be some like old fashioned and like problematic ideas there. But then for one, they're based entirely around white women and Eurocentric features, like we mentioned. Like, even with Kibbe, because part of the test is, like, talking about your face and your facial features. And, like, they're all stereotypically European features. Like, there'll be, like, four kind of possible answers regarding, like, your eye shape or your cheekbones or your nose or your lips. And, like, it is just all centered and, like, developed based off of white women. And then also, like, within the Kibbe system, like, they'll basically imply that you can be any type at any weight. But then obviously that's not really true, because like if you're something like a dramatic, which is tall and lean, it's like how would you possibly like identify your weight within that? And also there's this idea that like no matter how much weight you gain, your type doesn't change, which ultimately also doesn't really make sense. especially like also feels like has a misunderstanding of the different reasons why women gain weight and like why they gain weight in certain places and like how your age and like biological factors do play into that. He's like, if you're this type, you only gain weight in this place.
Okay, and like truly, where would Marlon Brando fit? That was
He's just a classic.
That was Coppola's whole problem. He's like, I can't, I don't know where you fit on the Kimmy body scale anymore.
It's going to throw off the harmony of the entire shoot, really. But yeah, I mean, like in Kibbe's eyes, because he's basing this off of like Hollywood starlets, right? And so for him, like the heaviest you can get is like Marilyn Monroe, who's would be like a size 8 by our metrics. People are always like, she's a size 14. And it's like, well, she's a size 14 for the 1950s, which is not the same as a current size 14.
Okay, this is Mae West erasure, though.
Well, bring it up with David Kibbe.
He doesn't talk about funny girls.
No, I'm so sorry. But then, like, more than that, there's also just an argument to be made that underlying some of Kibbe's philosophies is, like, actually harmful and outdated pseudoscience. So in an article for Dazed, Felicity J. Martin linked a lot of current TikTok beauty trends, including the Kibbe body system, to aesthetic pseudosciences like physiognomy, which is the belief that a person's facial features reveal something about their personality. Physiognomy goes back to ancient Greece, but it was repopularized in the Victorian era, where beauty writers perpetuated the idea that to wear makeup was to be dishonest about like who you were as a person, and like your moral character, because that was apparently something that could be read off of the face and just like your facial makeup. I don't want to make like a one for one comparison with that in Kibbe system, because within the Kibbe system, there's not like any implied value to each feature. People tend to prefer it to other body type classifications because they feel like it has a more neutral tone to it. But still, like we've said, Kibbe is assigning personality types and traits to each of these body or facial types, which I don't know. Do you think there's something off about that if we're kind of thinking about it in this realm of like weird old pseudoscience that kind of fueled eugenics?
Well, I was going to make a terrible joke at the beginning of this where I was like, he probably would have done really well in the Third Reich, just because I'm like, yeah, a lot of this is a little bit eugenics. Like, I think that trying to like measure the aesthetic value of a person or the aesthetics of a person down to like a science and then linking that to like an essence, which like I do think the concept of essence does have this innate value system within it, or this innate concept of like virtue and vice or good and bad. And I think that it can easily slip into that territory. So yeah, I do think that placing people within these categorizations and then trying to extrapolate from there is pretty dangerous. Like, I obviously don't think it's necessarily malintentioned in that way, but I think that it's a slippery slope. Eugenics really pops up in places you're like, oh.
Well, and I mean, like, I think especially on TikTok, I just think there's now with like this really big obsession with sort of trying to break down different ways that people can look and like assigning different buzzwords to it, or like, you know, talking about, do you have fox eyes, do you have cat eyes, do you have like this type of skull or that kind of skull? And it's like obviously being done by people who aren't necessarily trying to perpetuate eugenics, or like aren't even old enough sometimes to even put two and two together. But then it's like ultimately that is what we're doing, and we are sort of like making people think about their bodies and their faces in like a way that they just never would have come to like those conclusions themselves had they not been exposed to it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what eugenics is, beyond like the utter malice behind it, is this kind of too easy solution to like a really complicated problem of like population growth. And I think that humans falling into their most basic concepts of like, even what we talked about Mar-a-Lago and like looks maxing, is just like your most basic ideas of good and bad, and then like kind of jumping off from there. And I think that in many ways this plays into that, that the ease with which we can do that and like the way that it makes us feel. Like, I think like easy categorizations or like or creating binaries are like easy.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why it's dangerous, you know.
And I think like even, you know, if you're thinking about something like classifying whatever people's essences with the way they look, I think we forget that we're also conditioned to treat certain people certain ways based off of like the way they look, which then kind of teaches them who they are in the world. And it's not necessarily like, I mean, obviously it's not like people are born It's like, I'm born short and that's why I behave this way. So much as, like, I do think that people...
How are we going to explain short men, you know?
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Someone needs to talk about it.
But my last question for you, we've talked about the importance of bone structure to incels and people in looks maxing. And yet it's apparent from things like Kibi and other online trends dedicated to categorizing and, like, yeah, breaking down all of these features, that there's a pretty close equivalent on the girl side of the internet. Do you think that maybe we've become so accustomed to this kind of media for women over history that we're no longer flagging this kind of stuff as being as insidious or, like, alarming as we do when we see men do it?
Yeah, I do think that it has precedent in a way that makes it slip by us faster. I also think that, like, when things are branded in this girlish way or, like, being put forth by a woman, some, like, Gen Z girly on TikTok, it's packaged in a way that doesn't feel as scary as, like, I'm an incel and I want to kill my, you know, it's like, it's not, yeah, it doesn't feel as scary, I guess. And so it's like, oh, that's nice, you know, it just has a bit of a softer edge to it that makes it more maybe, like, palatable to mainstream culture, on top of the idea that, like, yeah, beauty standards are, the weight of it is more heavily placed upon women historically. And so, yeah, I would definitely say so.
I also wonder if, like, we've just been taught, like, to present these ideas in, yeah, like you're saying, like, packaging that doesn't necessarily slap you in the face with this is good and this is bad and this is ugly and this is pretty, but it's, like, coded in there. It's more covert. And, like, maybe it's either, like, manages to then fly under the radar, or it's just, like, we're so used to women's media being, like, sneakily toxic and harmful and mean to us that we're just like, that's just part of girlhood, that's being a girl.
I'd say so, yeah. As well, I wonder where, like, the fruit categorizations fall into this.
I know, so I dropped the ball in my research.
Where are the pears, and, like, why aren't we talking about the pear, you know? But, like, I wonder, because that was also my earliest exposure to this kind of thing. I wonder what Kibi thinks about the pear.
Well, what do you think the essence of a pear is?
Really juicy.